Hi guys, welcome to the third episode of Success in the City. Today we are going to be talking about personal finance.
Yes.
You know, kind of things that you should be aware of, knowing your trends and knowing your habits.
Exactly. And sorry guys, we missed you last Sunday. Sometimes the weeks are too hectic and we just need a little break. But we are doing our best to, you know,
bring a new episode every week.
Exactly, consistently, yeah. As much as we can. This week's is going to be on personal finance. As you know, we're following this sort of like four subcategory thing. We talked about careers, we talked about relationships and dating, and this one is another fun topic for me, personal finance.
Mm-hmm.
So the most important thing for us was to build and really work on our self-awareness and really understand our spending habits, like what kind of relationship you have with money. So to build on that, you know, like we both grew up kind of in similar backgrounds. We, you know, our parents weren't super rich, like we were basically poor. And we came from these households that like kind of struggled with money.
Yeah.
So because of that, for instance, growing up and like even right now, I tend to be a saver. To me, when I see that big number in my bank account, in my investment account, that makes me feel secure. So that's sort of like, you know, I feel sort of guilty when I make big purchases, if I'm a little bit like impulsive with my money. So that's sort of like how I developed my self-awareness and thought about how I grew up and my relationship with money.
Yeah, for me, it's a bit different. I mean, I still save a good amount. I still invest and everything, but I'm definitely more on the spendthrift side. For me, you know, growing up poor, right now having an opportunity to spend money and, you know, sort of spoil myself on the kinds of things that I was never, you know, able to get when I was younger, you know, that it makes me happy. It makes me feel, you know, it gives me some sense of validation for my success and kind of makes me, you know, it makes me happy at the end of the day. So
yeah,
I'm definitely, you know, on that side.
Which is interesting.
But I think it's important to, you know, the fact that I'm aware of it
is a big step already. Yeah. And same for me. You know, I think this is super interesting because we came from similar money backgrounds, similar financial status in our families, but then we're kind of like in really different directions in terms of how we, you know, treat our money now. So, you know, you can have like the same background as someone and then end up having a very different relationship with money. It's just really a personality thing, I think. So that's super interesting. And I think one thing that I got to do a little bit more since I met you is, I mean, I was never stingy, by the way. I don't want to give people this impression.
No, you're not. You're definitely not stingy. You're very generous.
I just got to enjoy my money more. So what I would do is like, I would buy like, let's say an expensive pair of sleds. You know, when I first bought my sleds, I bought them at the duty free. So it was like $100 off in my defense, but I felt so guilty. And then, you know, I would try to like not buy coffee. You know what I mean? I would try to make it up in these small ways. And like, what I learned from you is like those little things at the end of the day, I don't know how much of a difference they make. You know, they write all these articles about millennials, you know, the reason millennials aren't rich is because they spend money on avocado toast. But like at the end of the day, is that really, you know, is that really true? You basically kind of helped me enjoy my money a little bit more while still being responsible.
Yeah. The opposite side of that is when you came back from your trip, I think like the first day we went back, we went out together, we went to the Gucci store together and I bought the same pair of sleds that you bought.
Yeah, like so. He's such a copycat. I mean, he's looking for any reason to spend. So I was like, oh my gosh, like I bought this pair and he's like, I have to have it too. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So that was funny. But I mean, I guess since you met me too, you kind of, you know, like that's...
I've definitely been saving more. I've been more aware about what my choices are, you know, spending less, investing more, saving more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think like maybe one thing that you realized, I think we talked about this like a couple of weeks ago, and I did this too, spending to kind of distract yourself. Like I tend to, you know, do a lot of online shopping when I'm like dissatisfied with my job, or like I want to procrastinate, you know, stuff like that. And you realize like there's some expectation every time something shifts, it's exciting, you know, something to look forward to open that box. It's like you're getting a gift. You're like a kid getting a gift every week. And I think one thing we came to realize, especially during the pandemic, was like those little moments of joy were so short-lived.
Yeah, definitely.
So don't do emotional shopping is the moral of the story. But let's not digress. So we're first talking about saving and investing. First and foremost, we think you should have like 3 accounts.
Yeah, so you should have, you know, everyone should have a checking account, a savings account, and some sort of investment account.
Yes, agreed. And this is even for like people who are in college. Guys, you should have all of these things. When I was in college, I had Robinhood. I mean, I didn't have that much money. I had like literally 1K excess and I put it in Robinhood. I remember I had like 1 Amazon stock and like maybe like 1 Disney stock, 1 Bank of America stock. I was like so, so cute. Back then Amazon stock was like, I don't know, like $500. So that goes to show you, even in the course of like, what is it, like in less
6-7 years?
Yeah, exactly. Couple of, you know, less than 10 years for sure. Things can, I mean, Amazon is an outlier, but like things can multiply and it's just insane.
Yeah.
This is what all the financial influencers talk about, the power of compounding. But I think we kind of disagree with most of the financial influencers we follow because they focus too much on saving. They focus too much on like preventing lifestyle inflation. And we think there should be a little bit of a balance. Like you're still in New York in your 20s or 30s and you just want to, you know, you want to have memories. You want to like live comfortably.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't be making, you know, you can't be making, I don't know, 400K and still live like you did when you first moved into the city.
Exactly. Yeah. Live below your means.
Definitely below your means, but not not too below your means.
Don't like inflict pain on yourself.
Enjoy your money. I mean, enjoy life.
I think that's very important, especially if you're coming from like an immigrant background, if you're like first generation or you're the first person in your family to really make money. I think you kind of like feel guilty about enjoying your money, but then you have to remind yourself you worked really hard for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's like the little bit about checking, savings, and investments accounts. So you have to have all these three. So checking account is straightforward. Guys, please don't pay any fees for a checking account. Everything should be free at this point.
Yeah. And yeah, try not to pay stuff in cash either. Like open up a credit card.
Definitely. Build that credit early.
You know, yeah.
For sure. And then checking account, you know, keep your money there. And this is for people who are working. And the advice is like have an emergency fund that's separate from your checking account. So that would go into your savings account. And that would be 3 to 6 months rent plus groceries, I would say. So look at what you're spending on rent plus groceries in a month and then times 3. I think 3 months is enough because
New York rents are so expensive.
I don't want you guys keeping like 20K in your emergency fund. And at the end of the day, some of the money you hold in your investment account is liquid. Ideally, you wouldn't sell things at a loss because you have some financial difficulty. But, you know, if it's really like a horrendous situation, you're still able to sell, you know, your stocks or ETFs and like get the money transferred and you'll be able to get some liquidity.
If you do need to do that though, try to make sure you held it at least a year.
Yes.
To avoid those, you know, that
taxes.
Short-term capital gains. Yeah.
So basically, I mean, for people, let's give some background. So if you are holding stuck, let's say, for, you know, less than a year, when you sell that stock and you made, you know, some profit on that, the profit is going to be taxed at your income tax level, right? But when you wait and then sell it after a year, that profit is going to get taxed at long-term capital gains, which is
a lot, lot less.
A lot less. I mean, Google this. Depending on your income level, it could be like 15, 20%. Yeah. Most people fall there. So you're probably paying like half the taxes on the gains.
Probably, yeah.
So when you're investing, first of all, try not to realize losses ever. There's more, you know, sophisticated stuff that we can get into in a different episode, like tax loss harvesting. But try not to sell your investments at a loss. And if you have to sell something at a gain, try to sell it after a year so you avoid paying extra taxes. So that's the gist of it. So let's summarize, you know, checking, yeah, savings and investments.
Save at least 3 months worth of, you know, rent and mm-hmm. groceries.
Mm-hmm.
So build that up into your savings first. Mm-hmm. Once you have that, then you can, you know, sort of invest
the excess
money.
Amount. Yeah.
So we think that, like
our guide is how much usually?
Yeah, like 30%, I think.
30% after rent and groceries.
After rent and groceries, right? So that's going to mm-hmm. be, you know, what is that, like half of your... one of your paychecks or so?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
If you can.
So basically how we think about this is like rent and groceries, these are like our survival needs,
yeah,
right?
The bare minimum.
That's like, okay, we're gonna talk about rent in more detail in a little bit, but rent and groceries, that has to go. Okay, so we subtract that and whatever's remaining, I would definitely put 30% of that aside. Either goes into savings or investment, you know, wherever you are in your timeline. And the remaining, you know, you can use on going out, socializing, travel, shopping, whatever it may be. And I think, we think this is a good amount. And we can talk about how much we saved so far collectively. I think it's around like...
400K or so?
Yeah. Guys, this is pretty good.
It's good, yeah.
I know I said this like in our first episode too, when I mm-hmm. talked about how much we make collectively. For people who are like in college or who are not living in New York, it's actually quite hard to save this much, like 5 years out of college, especially because we didn't have these high-paying, like traditional, stereotypical banking jobs when we first started. We sort of climbed our ways
up here. I didn't have a bonus my first 2 years at all.
Mm-hmm. And my first bonus was 15K. and post-tax, that's like half of it. You know, bonus gets taxed higher too.
It does. Yeah. It gets taxed at almost 50%.
Mm-hmm.
But good thing is, since it's a big lump sum payment, you can, you know, save most of it.
Exactly.
And you should.
Yeah.
Invest most of it, not save. Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, pay down debt.
Yeah,
if you
that's
have
another
debt,
thing.
Yeah, I graduated with no debts. I was, I guess, lucky.
I graduated with debt, but I make enough money that I feel comfortable paying it off monthly.
Mm-hmm.
The interest rate is low enough right now that,
you
know, the money that I invest is appreciating at a much higher rate.
Yeah, so you're comfortable keeping that debt.
Yeah, than that money that I could have been, than using that money to pay off the debt. So, you know, I'm still at a net positive.
Yeah.
By investing that money and paying the small interest rate on the debt.
Definitely. Because like your interest rate is like 3%, but then you're making like, let's say 10% investing that money.
So you're still up like 7%.
Exactly.
But this obviously doesn't apply if you have like some crazy high interest rates. Like never have credit card debt.
Exactly.
Like, no. That's a big no-no.
That's a big no,
it's,
guys.
Yeah. It's bad for your credit score. It's horrible for your bank account. Like,
yeah.
It's just...
And credit card debt, I mean... this American culture is so built on credit. I'm in credit. I love talking about these things, but it's all about, you know, giving people a glimpse of the lives that they can't really have, right? Don't spend the money you don't have, guys. Like, I think credit cards tend to give us this false sense of, oh, I'll just buy this, you know, swipe and like think about it in a month. It's very irresponsible. So don't ever spend the money you don't have. don't, you know, do emotional shopping. This applies to eating too. Don't do emotional eating. Like, try not to. I mean, I know it's easier said than done, but recognize it when you do these things. Take a step back and, like, distract yourself with something other than shopping. So this is, in a nutshell, like, how we feel about saving and investing. And one thing we should touch on.
Yes, 401ks.
Yes. So would you rather have an investment account or a 401k or both? What do you think?
I think it really depends on how you see yourself in the future.
Mm-hmm. What tax bracket you're going to retire.
Yeah, exactly. So with the 401k, first of all, if you want to retire early, don't do a 401k.
Right. Unless, I would disagree, if your company matches your contributions.
Yeah, but if you want to retire at 40, and you can't, you know, take out of your 401k until you're what, like
59 and a half
or something. That's still a long time.
But it's still, even if you're paying penalty, you're getting free
money. So you might be net positive. So there's a 10% penalty for withdrawing early. Yeah. And you have to also pay the taxes before that.
That's the tricky thing with 401k though. Like, the balance you see there isn't actually what you have, right? Like, it's kind of like giving you a false sense of security if you see like 50K there. But truly, if you wanted to get that money now, it's probably around 25K.
So just to recap a bit, the way 401ks work is you can contribute before paying tax.
Yes, up to 19K.
$19,000 a year. And, you know, by contributing this pre-tax, you essentially lower your tax bracket. So that's one benefit, is you're paying less taxes on your earned income that year. Also, you're investing this money pre-tax, so it's appreciating, you know,
at a higher
notional value.
Yep, principal,
And a lot of employers will also match you, usually like up to 5% or so. So, you know, if you put in 5% of your salary, they'll add another 5%, and that'll vest, you know, probably in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So, you know, essentially you could be getting a lot of money
building up there, right? Yeah, exactly.
Because it's pre-tax and you get a match by your employer. But when it comes time to retire and you take money out, you will still pay tax on it, right?
Yeah.
At the sort of rate that you are
retiring.
That you're retiring at. So if you're taking out, you know, 50K a year, you're paying tax on 50K a year.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, the reason I don't like 401ks is because I think that when I'm will be of retirement age, I will be in a much higher tax bracket than I am now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense for me to lock in this money there, to have it sort of stuck for, you know, for not much more. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. And also another thing we talked about, you don't really like the funds that they offer, right?
Yeah. It's less flexibility. It's less kind of,
yeah.
And my employer doesn't match. So
that's an easy no.
So it's an easy no for me.
My employer matches, so I definitely put some money in there, but I would not necessarily max to 19K, this pre-tax limit. I guess. I just put just enough to get the maximum benefit of matching from my employer because of the same thing, the flexibility point. Right now with my investment account, for instance, I know everything. I know, you know, my balances every day. I check like how the markets impact my, you know, account. I can sell, buy, blah, blah, blah. But 401k, it's a little bit like they have 50 funds to choose from or something.
Yeah, something like that.
So I just like the flexibility point. So let's talk about our investment a little bit.
So this is just our opinion. It's not professional advice or anything.
We're not professional
investors,
I guess. We're just interested in this stuff and we're in finance, so that helps. And the investment account, what's the composition? We're going to sound a little crazy, but...
So for me, I'm around 50-50 with ETFs and stocks.
Yeah. I would say we're basically 100% equities, right?
Yeah. It's all in the equity space, yeah.
Yes. At this point, you know, like, this is our risk tolerance because we're young. You know, we could probably have, like, financial crisis. And, like, by the time, like, that recovery happens, we're still probably before retirement, right? So... because this is our risk tolerance, we're going all in, and we're young, so we're basically 100% stocks, and most of that is in ETFs, which is or mutual funds, which is like really low maintenance, you know, just kind of like throw your money in there and someone else diversifies it on your behalf, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's really helpful. And I think that's the easiest way to invest, unless you have a very, you know, keen eye for stocks and you like to like keep up to date. I do have a lot of stocks, right? I think
I have a few. I bought a few stocks opportunistically too, like
American
Airlines stocks when, you know, everything was tanking.
I'm like 60% up on that.
Yeah,
I mean, there is another thing. That's another thing, guys. I think always keep some cash around for opportunistic buying, right? Like, for instance, like when the dip happened in 2020, you had some excess money coming. And you were able to buy like some good stocks, like American Airlines.
And just to be clear, this is not the savings money that you should have. Yeah. This is separate money, you know, in your Robinhood or Schwab or whatever trading account you have.
Fidelity.
Keep, you know, keep
cash, some cash
available.
Yeah.
You know, like I would say, I don't know. I like to have at least 10 or 20K lying around just
that's
to like jump
me.
On good opportunities.
Yeah, that's probably good. I just get so impatient. I just like buy, like when I get my bonus, I just put it in there and I just like buy, invest. Like, but I do regret it because like sometimes there's a little bit of a tank and then like, you know, I want to buy like at a low price, but I sort of miss out on those opportunities. But we made some good choices opportunistically, like at the worst of the pandemic, we bought like Uber, American Airlines.
Yeah, they were very, very cheap.
Yeah, exactly. They were very cheap. And these are kind of like, you don't even need to be a sophisticated investor to see the logic, right? Like no one's flying right now. These companies are struggling. Or no one's Ubering right now. They can't Uber pool. These companies are struggling. But like Uber was, for instance, focusing on Uber Eats.
Yeah.
And the company I believed in, like as a consumer also, I love, as a client or I don't know.
Yeah, as a user.
As a user, I love these companies, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy some of, and then I was up like 100%, guys.
Yeah,
this was my best
like
stock.
That.
I cannot stop talking about Uber. I'm so annoying. But yeah, we made like 100% on one stock. That's crazy. I mean, it's so hard to make 100%. So make sure you have enough for these kinds of opportunities, because it really gives your portfolio boost.
And another thing, I know everyone always says this, but if your money is down, if your portfolio is down, do not sell.
Panic.
Do not panic. Do not sell. Like you were down, right?
Oh,
when
this
all started, and now
so
you're
down.
You went from what? Like you were down like 4% or something?
No. I mean, I was down like 16-20%.
Wow. Yeah. And now you're what? You're up like.
I mean, I don't know.
Something crazy. Like
I put so much money.
Exactly, yeah.
So.
It's always good to keep it. Markets will always rally.
Guys,
things
always
will always
think,
go up.
You know, you're like 20-something or 30-something. I don't know the age demographics of our listeners, but like, always think you're a long-term investor, okay? Unless something like Corona happens, then you can, you know, look at opportunistic things. But unless you know, you're building an expertise to be a day trader or like a, you know, swing trader. Just think, you know, do things that are just obvious and common sense and just think about a long-term horizon.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah, okay, let's move on to spending.
So
how much is okay to spend on rent? I mean, if we ask you, we fight about this all the time.
I think
we live separately, by the way. So
yeah, we don't live together.
Yeah.
I think that for an expensive city like New York, it's okay to pay up to 50%, up to one paycheck.
Yeah, I totally disagree, guys. So basically, you should definitely in the first couple of years in the city, especially if you're single, live with roommates. Rent is a killer. There's nothing sadder than seeing half of your money gone. And I experienced this first when I moved out from living with roommates to living in a studio. It is so sad. If you make enough money, let's say you make, oh my gosh, you make like 20K, 10K a month, then you can think about it because still half of your remaining money is a lot of money. But starting out first year analyst, you're making 85K.
That's true. That's true.
Half of your money gone, you have 2K left.
That's a very good point. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't just be 50%. You should have a minimum amount of money left.
Exactly.
Right? That's very important.
Yeah, very important. So I think maybe the max you should go for, that's including rent and groceries, should mm-hmm. be one paycheck.
Yeah.
But not just rent only.
Okay.
Try to live with roommates in the first couple of years, even if you don't have friends actually in the city. For instance, like I didn't have close friends living in the city graduating from my college.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this can sound sketchy, but you have to be smart about it. It's like online dating, do your due diligence, but go on a Facebook group and like people are posting there, you know, looking for roommates, they have an extra room or something. So that's the first and foremost, that's the biggest advice. And if you get a pay raise or something like that, let's say you get $500 raise a month, do not go, you know, get an apartment that's $500
more. Stay on top of lifestyle inflation.
Exactly.
I know I've been guilty of this before.
Oh yeah, and yes.
But it's under control now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But much, much, much better now. Because you can also get excited, right? That's the thing. Like for me, when I got my first pay bump, I was like, oh my gosh, like I've lived with roommates my whole life. I'm just gonna live alone. And I'm gonna say I regretted it a little bit. But yeah. Okay, so what's our second biggest spending category?
Food
and going out.
Yeah, so going out, restaurants. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Groceries are very expensive in New York.
Yeah, but it's not so bad in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, well, it's just like, you know, don't go to D'Agostino's or...
Oh, gosh.
Or even Whole Foods, right?
Oh, my gosh, guys, I hate D'Agostino's. It's my personal enemy. Are you kidding me?
It's so expensive.
$5 avocados. I'm not even exaggerating. Is it $5 there? It
might be like $3, but it's...
Oh, gosh, I use that for it, but, you know, whatever. We love Trader Joe's. Even if you live far away from Trader Joe's, if you actually take a freaking cab across the city, when I lived in the Upper East Side, I would go to the Upper West Side Trader Joe's.
Yeah, like, that's like $8, $10 cab.
Pay for that cab, you're still saving money. So please go to Trader Joe's. It's just
Seriously.
Such a good place. I, on average, right now with the pandemic, which means I'm cooking most meals at home, I spend $100 a week, which is really not so bad. It's like $400 a month.
Yeah.
That's a lot of meals. Obviously, it's a different story when I'm going into the office and I'm buying lunch.
Yeah. And like, let's just be clear, like $400 is with buying organic things, like, you know, not buying like more than just the bare essentials, you know, buying mm-hmm. if you want to buy fancy fruits or veggies.
Yeah,
it's not a...
Exactly.
You can definitely get by with less than $400 a month.
I really think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... and then going out to eat is another big category for us, especially when we first met, right? Like,
yeah.
We would... You know, you just met, and, like, you're... Especially if it's, like, spring or summer, the city is so nice. You just want to be outside. You get lazy to cook. I think you just have to be very careful with that. Like, we made up this rule where, like, we just want to go out less, but go to nicer places. So it's definitely quality over quantity.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's also healthier, you know. We just feel so much better, like, you know, energy levels, stomach and digestion since quarantine because we've been cooking so much at home.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, go 2-3 times, go out to eat or drink. You know, one could be with like the date or significant other, one could be with friends, you know, maybe mm-hmm. maybe those circles actually intersect for you, so that's even better. But yeah, I would definitely discourage against doing more than 3 times a week. And takeouts. I'm against takeouts. I don't think I ever like took out until I met you. if you're taking out, guys, just go to the freaking restaurant, right?
I mean, yeah, I don't it's understand. A change of scenery. It's nice.
Yeah.
Unless you're like sick or something, then it's fine.
Yeah,
you don't
okay.
Or busy, or you don't have time.
But. Yeah. Or like, you know, some people like in the U.S., they don't want to go to a restaurant alone. They don't want to go to a cafe alone. I think this is, in Europe, this is more acceptable.
Like acceptable. It's acceptable here too. People are just
they're kind of self-conscious about it. But you know, get a book. Even like you have your phone, FaceTime someone. It's actually nice to go to a restaurant alone too. I think just don't do takeout. I mean, if you're just getting food from outside, might as well eat it at a restaurant. It's just nicer. That's my take.
And it tastes better.
Yes, it tastes better when it's not in a plastic container.
It really does.
I'm just very foreign about this. And another category for us is like, you know, these mini things like subscriptions, Amazon purchases, like
HBO, Hulu, whatever
it may be, you know. Little self-care things, you know, these things also add up, guys. And I think when I started being conscious of my smaller purchases, I ended up saving more money. Because when you make big purchases, you actually think about that a lot. Mm-hmm. But with the smaller purchases, like Amazon, like just one click, 10, 30, it all adds up. Learning to do your nails, learning to give yourself a blowout, these little things are very helpful. You know, learn how to be a little bit like more low maintenance and
self-sufficient.
Save money. In these categories, one thing I would never recommend anyone is dye your hair yourself at home or cut your own hair. Do not do those things. Speaking from personal experiences, just do those things less frequently, but do it professionally is my. My little advice. So we're talking about a lot of spending here, you know.
Yeah, basically everything.
How do we
everything here other than than your rent should be on a credit card.
Exactly.
Because credit cards have benefits. They give you points. You get things. You know, even like Chase has this like what is it like the Freedom Unlimited card? I think it's just 1.5 percent cash back on everything. Zero fee, you know, nothing. Like you just by using a credit card, you're just getting money. Free money basically.
Exactly.
You're building up a credit history. And honestly, you're giving yourself a buffer. Like you don't, you know, if you need to buy groceries, you're running a little low on money in your checking account, but you know you have a paycheck coming up.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice.
It's like it's a bridging nice buffer that gap. To have.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So definitely like nobody should be using their checking account or cash.
Same thing.
Cash checking account is the same thing.
Do not use your go around using your debit card. Don't do that, please. Because if you're getting points for a no fee credit card, you should. Those points come in very handy. For instance, for us, we try to travel what twice or three times a year.
We
usually get all of our flights for free.
Yeah, so I have the Chase Sapphire Reserve card, which is one of those.
I hate that card. they never accept it.
It's expensive. It's like 500 something a year. Mm-hmm. But then they give you like 300 in travel credit and all of these perks, as well as a lot of money back on travel and dining, basically. You get 3% on travel and dining, and then, you know, if you use those points towards traveling, it's 1.5 times. So essentially, you know, like I do, I always use my stuff for flights or rental cars or hotels. Mm-hmm. It becomes 4.5% back.
Yes.
On all of my
That's really good.
Dining and travel purchases.
I don't believe in this card because I'm bitter. They never accept me, and I'll tell you why. First of all, we differ in this. I don't believe in high fee credit cards. Maximum should be those $95 annual fee cards you should get, and if it's worth it. You need to do your math, look at how much you're spending, and then see if it's worth it. The reason they never accept me for this credit card, I apply for it, they reject me, is because when I moved into the city, I was in full on hustle mode, okay? I was opening these credit cards, Bank of America, Citi, Chase, like whatever. They have those promotions, like, oh, if you spend $1,000 in the first 3 months, you get like $250. I was hustling hardcore. Like I had like almost 10 credit cards, and I was just doing it so well because I was so diligent. and getting all this free money, and I was getting like thousands a year for free. So why not? Until like it felt like it was kind of getting out of control. I was like, okay, like I just can't have this many applications on my phone and, you know, like rotate, and I save my, you know, credit card numbers on my like online shopping
profiles
and stuff like that. So it was just like, okay, at some point I mean, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't miss a payment. Nothing went wrong. It was just kind of like, okay, it's a hassle.
Yeah.
Just too high maintenance. At some point I was like, okay, you know what? I'm making enough money. I can't hustle this much. But since then I just kept, obviously I kept all my like zero fee cards. And I just consistently...
Should never close zero fee cards.
Yeah.
Because they just...
Hurt your credit.
They hurt your credit score.
Credit score.
Yeah.
But I just keep like one fee card that I think pays off for me. But it's a very, you know, it's a very modest fee. It's $95. So I'm not doing those high fee cards anymore. Unless they waive the annual membership fee for me, which they will never do.
The reason why they didn't accept you for the Chase card...
is because I opened so many credit cards.
Yeah, they actually have a limit. If you open more than, I don't know how many, 5 cards in the last 3 years or something.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
They don't give it to you. So.
Definitely open more than 5 cards. So anyway, it doesn't matter, right? At the end of the day, I think just building your credit score is the moral of the story here.
Yeah.
Start early, never miss a payment. And low utilization also. Try to keep your credit card limit very high and try to use a very low percentage of that limit.
One thing I'm gonna say about credit scores though, 750 is like the magic number.
Yeah, I'm higher than that. Guys, despite all this opening and closing, and some closing, not a lot, I'm actually higher than that. I hit like 780. I'm higher than you. Hey.
You are higher than me.
Hey, Chase may not be accepting me, but I have a freaking high credit score. I'm bitter.
I'm not saying this just because I'm bitter, but I think that anything above 750 doesn't matter because
it's all the same, really.
You're never like, these things matter when you apply for loans. These things matter when you apply for credit cards. 750 is that higher bound for everything.
That, like, good quality candidate.
Everything over 750 is basically the same.
So, you know, guys, if you have low credit scores, just Google it. There are, like, 5 inputs that go into this. And the first and foremost, the first thing you need to do is just get rid of the debt.
Yeah.
Pay it down. Don't miss a payment. And then it'll all just, like, work itself out slowly. Anyway, this was a very long episode. Clearly, we are nerds. We're personal finance nerds. So hopefully this was helpful.
Yeah.
And, you know, let us know if you guys have any more questions. You can email us.
Yeah, you can email us at successinthecity.ny@gmail.com.
Or you can find that Instagram.
Yes.
I just changed the Instagram name. I think it's successinthecitypodcast.ny, something like that. I mean, we have a unique name. You'll find us. So find us on Instagram. Message us your questions. Email us feedback. We love all of that. And
yeah, please just follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Spotify.
Let us know how we're doing.
And let us know how we're doing. Yeah. All feedback is welcome.
Definitely. All right, guys. Until next Sunday.